About 15 to up to 20% of individuals, usually those who are elderly and in risk groups, wind up getting serious disease requiring supportive care.
But the question remains, is there enough of that care? This is Wednesday, the fourth day of March, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program, so please join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, a church sect is getting blamed by many for South Korea's coronavirus problem. And women, many of them, are facing fear in Afghanistan. All that and more on today's VOA Asia. The coronavirus was the target of some speech, some hearings, some comments, and a lot of questions on Capitol Hill, the capital of the United States here in Washington. Ashlyn Peter from VOA covered it. What was it all about? What did they want to know?
So a bunch of senators listened to four health experts. They're heads of various departments here in the U.S., and they wanted to discuss the future of the spread of the coronavirus and what these various health departments are doing to try and stop it. A lot of the heads of the departments were saying that they're doing everything that they can, but some senators were questioning that.
And what was the scope of the questions? There has been some criticism as far as the U.S. being prepared for testing is concerned.
Definitely. So Dr. Stephen Hahn, he is the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, has been saying that there will be 1 million tests by this Friday.
The companies that we're working with on this, they have the capacity to develop enough test kits to send out by the end of the week. And this is a dynamic process. Every day we're hearing from additional manufacturers that they can do this. 2,500 test kits by the end of the week. That should give us the capacity in the hands of laboratories once they validate to perform up to 1 million tests.
A lot of senators were questioning that. They were saying they don't know if 1 million tests will be able to be produced in such a short amount of time. So that was put into question, and Dr. Hahn didn't really have any straightforward answers on that.
Did anybody have any straightforward answers to anything?
There were some straightforward answers. A lot of senators were asking for data and statistics, which the health experts didn't have. It's just too early to have that information right now. But they were doing their best to answer the questions.
There had been some talk, and it's still going on, as far as the need for ventilators and various breathing devices that we simply don't have enough in this country.
So Dr. Fauci from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases was saying that about 15 to 20% of individuals are going to require supportive care.
As we know from the data that have come out predominantly from China, if you look at the now 90,000 people who've been infected and the number of deaths that have occurred, about 80% of individuals who get infected do really quite well without any specific intervention. Namely, they spontaneously recover. However, about 15 to up to 20% of individuals, usually those who are elderly and in risk groups, wind up getting serious disease requiring supportive care. That could be oxygen, that could be intensive care, that could be intubation, or even more dramatic interventions.
So ventilators and other breath support devices. And that's what we need to focus on right now is how quickly we can get intervention to them, because that really is critical. And right now, we don't have all that we need to be able to do that.
Do we have the money that is needed to do that? Did that come up?
That definitely came up. So a lot of the senators are trying to pass a bill for emergency appropriations. They want to be able to get the funding to afford these respirators and ventilators that we do need, especially for elderly. And they're trying to get it passed, but there's just no way to know yet if that's going to happen or when and how many funds will actually be allocated.
It seems that on one end of this entire scenario is people, basically medical people, warning about what is about to happen or what they think is going to happen in the near future, and the others saying, wait a minute, we have to stay away from alarmism. So how was that discussed?
Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, he's a Republican, was someone who really touched on the difference between urgency and alarmism. He was saying that there definitely needs to be a sense of urgency. This is something that the government must take seriously, especially with the statements that the president, President Trump, has made recently, trying to downplay the coronavirus and the spread of it. So a lot of senators, including Scott, are saying that, you know, historically, senators don't really have to fight the president in the wake of an illness outbreak like this, but they're having to do that now. So they're trying to say that urgency is definitely necessary. We shouldn't be downplaying this, but at the same time, we shouldn't be alarmist about it either, because that could lead to potential fear and prejudice that isn't going to help the situation. It's only going to make it worse.
VOA's Ashlyn Peter, who went to cover a congressional hearing on a very important topic today. Thanks, Ashlyn.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus urged people throughout the world Tuesday to stop stockpiling masks and other protective gear, saying they are instead needed by health workers who are fighting the coronavirus.
We're concerned that countries' abilities to respond are being compromised by the severe and increasing disruption to the global supply of personal protective equipment caused by rising demand, hoarding, and misuse.
One day after declaring the world is in uncharted territory and that the accelerated spread of the virus in South Korea, Italy, Iran, and Japan is the world's greatest threat, Tedros said shortages are leaving doctors, nurses, and other frontline health workers dangerously ill-equipped to care for COVID-19 patients. Tedros explained that both the coronavirus and the common seasonal flu cause respiratory problems and are spread the same way, but that the coronavirus does not spread as efficiently.
While many people globally have built up immunity to seasonal flu strains, COVID-19 is a new virus to which no one has immunity. That means more people are susceptible to infection, and some will suffer severe disease.
As the virus continues to spread globally, there's growing optimism in China, where the number of new infections dropped to the lowest levels in several weeks, and thousands of recovered patients began to be released from hospitals. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. A Toronto-based cyber research group says in a report Tuesday that Chinese social media platforms began censoring references to coronavirus and keywords critical of the government's handling of the infection as early as December. A disgruntled former security guard who took 30 people hostage at a mall in the Philippine capital during a day-long siege Monday is now in custody. The gunman had been fired by the company that provides security for the shopping mall. A Pakistani court Tuesday gave the go-ahead to that country's largest women's rights event, but told organizers to ensure participants adhere to decency and moral values. Myanmar stopped a cruise boat carrying hundreds of tourists from docking in that country, a senior tourism official said. VOA Asia continues. Over the past 2 weeks, South Korea has found more upwards of 5,000 cases of coronavirus. More than half of those infections have been linked to a single fringe religious group, one of many offshoots of Christianity in South Korea. Its members say their group was just unlucky, but many South Koreans disagree, saying the sect is secretive and hasn't fully cooperated with authorities. VOA's Bill Gallo has more from Seoul.
This is the Shincheonji Church of Jesus. Its leader, Iman Hee, claims to be a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, that he speaks on behalf of Jesus, and that he may live forever. But the reason he is now world famous is that many blame his group for an explosion of coronavirus infections in South Korea.
As the leader of Shincheonji, I would like to offer my sincere apology to the people of South Korea.
The headquarters of the Shincheonji religious group is in this office building right behind me, the top floor. Authorities have shut that office down for now, but many people walking around outside remain very angry at this group.
I think Shincheonji doesn't benefit the public. In fact, I think it's actually harmful to society.
I feel anxious since its members from across the country visit this neighborhood. I don't even really feel safe eating at restaurants.
The group's church in Daegu, South Korea, now looks more like a hazardous material site. This is where a 61-year-old woman attended two meetings, despite having a fever and a sore throat. She had refused a coronavirus test. By the time she did test positive, it was too late. She's believed to have infected dozens. That's not surprising to some ex-members, like Kim Chung-il, who says there was pressure to attend church even when sick.
Basically, they need to meet attendance standards or else they will be expelled, and that is what Shinjeonji believers fear the most.
Kim left the group in 2004 after 6 years. He now tries to convince other members to leave.
They force their religious dogma on people and brainwash them. Their believers are mentally imprisoned.
Shinjeonji sometimes holds mass displays, seen here at a stadium in Seoul. But not all of its activities are so public. Some adherents say they are reluctant to disclose their membership for fear of religious persecution. That's making it harder for authorities to track down members for coronavirus testing. But a U.S.-based member of the group, which has an overseas presence, insists the church is being unfairly blamed.
It's pretty widely known now about the virus that most people who have the virus, especially in the beginning stages, are unaware that they have the virus. So to accuse people of intentionally spreading the virus is a very strong accusation.
This Shinjeonji member also denies that sick people were urged to attend church amid the outbreak. But he concedes not everyone may have followed that directive.
Members are encouraged to give their very best for God and to seek God first in all things. Some people sometimes may have interpreted that as come to church even if you're sick.
A fateful mistake that could have global ramifications. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Here's what's happening now. The International Olympic Committee said Tuesday it was busy with preparations for a successful Summer Games in Tokyo in less than 5 months at a time when the coronavirus outbreak is widening. Many sporting events around the world have either been canceled or postponed in the wake of the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The agreement signed Saturday between the United States and the Taliban aimed at ending the 18-year conflict in Afghanistan has raised hopes for peace, but also has raised concerns that Afghan women may lose their rights and freedoms once U.S. troops withdraw. VOA's Ardita Dhanalari reports.
The U.S.-Taliban agreement brings new worries for Afghan women activists. They say the deal to end the war in Afghanistan does not protect their rights.
I think that the U.S.-Taliban deal mostly reflects the U.S. and the Taliban's interests rather than the rights of the Afghan government and the people, in particular women.
The U.S.-Taliban agreement has paved the way for an intra-Afghan dialogue. In those negotiations, the Afghan government wants to get concrete commitments from the Taliban to protect women's rights.
The hope is that the Afghan government and the hopefully inclusive delegation that they bring to the Taliban, to the table with the Taliban, will negotiate a political agreement that will protect women's rights. The Taliban has indicated that they will protect women's rights to education and to work.
At the same time, the Taliban has warned against mingling between men and women. That has raised fears about freedom of movement and women's social and political engagement.
Under the Taliban regime, no women or girls had the right to go to school. Therefore, we are afraid that the Taliban comeback can cause us to lose our right to get an education.
State Department spokeswoman Morgan Ortegas rejects criticism that the United States has not prioritized women's rights in its talks with the Taliban.
Every single time that Secretary Pompeo has spoken about this peace deal with the Taliban and moving forward towards a political resolution in Afghanistan, every time he's talked about this, he's talked about women's rights. He's talked about the fact that the Taliban have to sit down with the government of Afghanistan. They've committed to this with women, with civil society. And so we are making sure sure we are giving every effort to make sure that all voices are heard in intra-Afghan dialogue.
There are other tools Washington can use to pressure the Taliban, says analyst Jamila Biggio. What will be key, she says, is that the intra-Afghan negotiated deal includes conditions.
We must ensure that there is conditionality, that what the Taliban agrees to on women's rights, that if they aren't fulfilling these terms, that the Afghan government or and others will be able to back off other agreements and other terms that they have agreed to within the political settlement.
When it comes to women's rights, adds Biggio, it will be up to Afghan women to take the lead by putting pressure on their government and raising their voice at the negotiating table. Ardita Dunelari, VOA News, Washington.
We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Indonesia's Mount Merapi volcano erupted Tuesday morning, sending a 6-kilometer column of ash into the air and triggering the closure of the airport in the nearby city of Solo on the densely populated Java Island. Indonesia's Volcano Observatory Notice for Aviation issued a red alert and said the ash cloud was moving north. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. The Chinese government recently invited journalists to put on protective gear and tour a dairy factory at a power plant in Beijing to demonstrate that business was back to normal after production and sales initially fell amid the coronavirus outbreak. State-owned dairy company Mengniu's sales declined 20% last month due to travel and other controls imposed to contain the virus outbreak.
Every year, the off-season of dairy production follows after the Spring Festival, and the busy season is before the Spring Festival. The period before the Spring Festival is also the season of milk production. At the beginning of the coronavirus outbreak, there was an impact on logistics and transportation because of strict control, so we had challenges in both sales and delivery.
While three of Mengniu's plants in the province at the epicenter of the outbreak had to shut down, the Dairy Corporation's plants elsewhere in China took over productivity to supply the people of Hubei. Meng said production had recently recovered, adding in areas like Beijing, most people came back to work. Also, there is an opportunity brought by the virus outbreak as people hope to improve their immune system by eating more dairy. On the same media tour, officials at a state-owned power company said most of its 138 employees at the steam and gas power plant had returned to work following the Lunar New Year holidays and the concurrent outbreak. The Geneva International Motor Show began on Monday, March 2nd, under a cloud from the coronavirus. Organizers have urged companies to make sure employees didn't show symptoms for 14 days before arriving in Switzerland. Car makers are rolling out new electric, hybrid, and mild hybrid models as they reshape fleets to meet new European Union regulations coming into force in 2021. The new rules require car makers to cut fleet average emissions of carbon dioxide to 95 grams per kilometer, down from 130 grams per kilometer. This year's Geneva Auto Show embodies the pressures being piled on the auto industry, fears over the coronavirus, slowing demand in key markets, and the urgent need to convince more European car buyers to choose electric cars.
Coronavirus is potentially a disaster. It's not just a disaster because of the supply chains that they operate to, these just-in-time supply chains being disrupted by the travel disruption, by the shutdowns in some of the countries where lots of parts are made for cars, particularly China and across Asia.
The Geneva Motor Show is typically a place to show off wildly expensive supercars that only the very rich can buy. Among those taking a pass on this year's gathering were Ford, Jaguar, Lamborghini, Land Rover, Mitsubishi, and Nissan. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. The U.S. Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate by 0.5 percentage point Tuesday in an effort to minimize the damage the coronavirus is inflicting on the global economy. This rate cut, which comes after cuts by other central banks across the globe, was the U.S. central banking system's first since last year and the first emergency cut of this type since the economic crisis in 2008. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted that the Federal Reserve is cutting but must further ease and, most importantly, come into line with other countries and competitors. He said, "We're not playing on a level field, not fair to USA. It's finally time for the Federal Reserve to lead more easing and cutting," he said. Continued fears among investors about the economic impact of the coronavirus sent U.S. stock prices sharply lower Tuesday, even after the Federal Reserve announced the emergency rate cut. The Fed's announcement Tuesday shows growing concern that COVID-19 is adversely affecting global economic activity and could eventually trigger a worldwide recession. Earlier Tuesday, the group of seven leading economies vowed to use all appropriate tools to address the spread of the virus, but did not disclose specific measures to combat the spread. The spread of the virus has rattled world financial markets as stock prices closed out last week with their largest weekly decline since the 2008 financial crisis. This news break from VOA Asia, China's UN ambassador said Monday that North Korea is suffering negatively from the coronavirus and called for greater flexibility from the United States and other countries on lifting sanctions against the country. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the UN Refugee and Migration Agencies are jointly appealing for $877 million to aid 855,000 Rohingya refugees, most of whom fled violence and persecution from Myanmar 3 years ago, and more than 444,000 vulnerable Bangladeshis hosting them. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than half of the money will provide vital services, including food, shelter, clean water, and sanitation. The rest of the appeal will be used for health, protection, education, site management, energy, and environmental needs. Shahryar Alam of Bangladesh's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says his government has welcomed this large exiled population within its midst. But he acknowledges their presence poses challenges and that the solution to the plight of the Rohingya refugees is repatriation to Myanmar when that becomes possible. But this is likely to happen, he says, without the vigorous support of the international community.
We expect the UN member countries to do more and work closely and do everything possible to put pressure on Myanmar to take their citizenship back in a manner, a repatriation that is safe, voluntary, and dignified.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi agrees that Bangladesh deserves support for hosting nearly 1 million Rohingya. He laments the short attention span of the media and the international community, who quickly move from one crisis to another. As a consequence, he says the Rohingya have become largely forgotten. He agrees with the government of Bangladesh that the solution continues to be in Myanmar.
The problem is that things that need to be done there to create conditions for refugees to return from Bangladesh into Myanmar are too slow or not happening yet. Freedom of movement, return of internally displaced people that are in camps in Rakhine State.
Grandi says those who return should be granted housing, land, and property rights and be given the education and training they need to be able to work. But the most fundamental step of all, he says, is for the Rohingya to be given a path to citizenship. The Rohingya, who have lived in Myanmar for generations, were stripped of their citizenship in 1982. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Rob McLean, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.